From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ed Morin with the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, June 24th, 2020. A technician with C.N. Brown has been fined, reprimanded, and had his license suspended for his part in the chain of events that led to the deadly September 2019 explosion at the nonprofit LEAP office in Farmington. The explosion leveled the building and claimed the life of Farmington Fire Captain Michael Bell. Several other people were injured. According to the Maine Fuel Board, the technician in question failed to perform a leak test on the propane system after LEAP employees reported that their tank appeared to be empty. The leak test is a safety measure required by law any time a propane system experiences an interruption in service. Unbeknownst to LEAP or C.N. Brown, the gas line had been breached 2 days before during construction when company Techno Metal Post Maine drilled into nearby pavement without first identifying utility lines. The subsequent leak continued undetected over a weekend after the C.N. Brown technician delivered the gas without performing the required pressure test. Maine's two U.S. senators were among those on the Senate Intelligence Committee who questioned CIA Inspector General nominee Peter Thompson today about his independence from the Trump administration, Maleary reports.
Both Republican Susan Collins and independent Angus King directed pointed questions at Thompson about whether he would carry out his duties independently from the White House if he were to be confirmed. King criticized Thompson for his response to a question from Collins about a previous intelligence inspector general who was fired by President Trump for providing a whistleblower complaint to the committee.
You're not helping yourself by obfuscating and avoiding these questions. You also avoided Senator Collins' question, which was exactly the right question. Everybody in the country knows what happened in that case. It's a very simple question. Should that complaint have been forwarded to Congress? Yes or no?
Thompson also testified that the White House has never given him a loyalty test as a condition of being selected as nominee for the CIA Inspector General post. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Modern Pest Services, committed to offering eco-friendly pest control solutions. Learn more at modernpest.com.
On the next Maine Calling, your vote 2020 candidate interviews. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Join me for conversations with two primary election candidates. Bree Kidman, Democrat running for U.S. Senate for the first half hour. Then Eric Brakey, Republican running for U.S. Congress for the second half hour. We'll discuss their positions and priorities and take your questions. Maine Calling, your vote 2020 candidate interviews. Thursday live at 1 and rebroadcast at 7 on Maine Public Radio.
Spurred by the death of George Floyd and nationwide demonstrations against systemic racism and police brutality, Maine lawmakers today held a rare off-session hearing to plot reforms to the state's criminal justice system. The hearing touched a wide range of policy areas that other states are also attempting to overhaul, including police use of force and racial bias. But as Steve Missel reports, those changes have been difficult to implement before, and it's unclear if the current legislature will return in time to try again.
Wednesday's joint hearing by the legislature's Judiciary and Criminal Justice Committee was dominated by presentations of reports, some old, some new. But one statistic provided by Maine Attorney General Aaron Fry seemed to encapsulate the problem that has repeatedly dogged efforts to make changes to the state's criminal justice system. Since 1993, Fry's office has received only one complaint of racial profiling by Maine police. That one complaint in 27 years can be interpreted different ways, depending on one person's point of view. Toward the end of the meeting, Representative Craig Hickman, a Democrat from Winthrop and a black man, provided his.
People are not just marching in the streets because of police killings. People are also marching in the streets because they don't believe that law enforcement officers will ever be held accountable for their abuses of power.
Hickman then explained how his experiences with racial profiling made him reluctant to report it, or even talk about it. There was fear that nothing would be done, as well as the fear of retribution.
So it's going to be hard to file a complaint in a system where you're not sure if the complaint itself will make you a target of more aggressive policing in the future because your name is attached to the complaint.
Hickman's comments highlighted one of the biggest problems confronting efforts to overhaul policing in Maine, from the recruitment of officers to use of force tactics and profiling. In addition to cultural, racial, and institutional barriers, it's hard to gauge how Maine's policing system treats people of color. That's because most Maine police departments keep just rudimentary statistics about the race of people they arrest. Racial profiling data of traffic stops doesn't exist at all.
I do believe data is power. I think it is important. It's also important that we collect it the right way.
Maine Department of Public Safety Commissioner Michael Soschuk told lawmakers Wednesday that collecting arrest and profiling data is a key to guiding policy decisions about policing. But law enforcement officials have generally opposed collecting racial profiling data. Last year, Hickman included a profiling reporting requirement in a bill he proposed. The bill ultimately passed, but the reporting requirement was stripped out at the urging of law enforcement agencies, which asserted that it was too costly, burdensome, and unnecessary because racial profiling, they said, is rare. Now Hickman and other lawmakers want law enforcement officers like Soschuk to support it. When asked if he would, Soschuk answered with a qualified yes.
If we talk to professionals and they say, this is the best way to do that, and this is how we think we can do that effectively without offending everybody we talk to, which again would be counterintuitive, then we want to be on board with that. We want to be part of that conversation.
But when such a proposal might be considered is unclear. The coronavirus pandemic prompted the legislature to adjourn in mid-March, and it's not yet known if lawmakers will return before the next legislature is elected in November. That means the policing reforms that demonstrators have been clamoring for may have to wait once again. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap says Mainers have requested about twice as many absentee ballots this year as they did in 2018. At the end of last week, about 104,000 people had requested absentee ballots, and voters may continue to ask for them until Election Day, July 14th. Dunlap says if things go smoothly and clerks are able to process ballots between now and then, reporting primary election results won't be a problem.
They should, by all means, try to get everything processed and tabulated on election night. If it spills over into another day, we'll manage that as it appears to be happening.
Dunlap says his office has learned from the ranked choice process that voters need to be informed about where the state is in the tabulation process. Those who vote absentee have until polls close to get their ballots to the clerk's office. Dunlap advises people to allow several days for their ballot if they're turning them in by mail. Maine's lobstermen, dealers, and regulators are warily eyeing the possibility of a market crash when the big seasonal harvest of recently molted lobsters called shedders come in. With restaurants and other end buyers still struggling, there's talk within the industry of reducing the size or timing of the catch to avoid a glut. But as Fred Bever reports, no one appears to be enthusiastic about the options.
Portland lobsterman Willis Spear says he's seen some signs that the shedders might be starting to come in.
We hauled up in the bay just to see what was there, and there was shedders. But they're different shedders than last year. They're hard shedders. They're eating the bait, you know, usually. Maybe I'm late. I don't know. But they were nice lobsters.
Spear says he's recently getting $3.50 a pound, a dockside price that he says seems too low, but which others say is a sign of how markets have tanked since the arrival of COVID-19. Some lobstermen reporting dock prices at $2.30 and worse. So cautious interest is growing in whether the industry should embrace efforts to limit or time the catch to forestall a glut that would annihilate prices. One idea, raise minimum sizes, throw more of the smaller lobsters back, and bank them underwater for a time when market demand is better.
I was in agreement about increasing the measure to help put more lobsters back on the bottom for next year. But then I got thinking that it's all based on the assumption that the dealers will keep the price up.
Other possibilities include requiring that culls be thrown back. The theory is that by removing the lower quality lobsters with just single claws or no claws at all, the overall product quality should increase, and that should help the price. But as Marine Resources Commissioner Patrick Kelleher told an online meeting with Downeast Lobstermen this week, that might just create an oversupply of culls down the line.
And so there was a lot of interest there. The problem is we put something like that in place. When you take that off, just think of the amount of culls that you might have available that would be landed. So it could create an unintended consequence.
Other efforts to slow down the pace of the catch also could suffer from the law of unintended consequences. For example, lobstermen are discussing limiting the number of days each week at sea, ideally slowing the pace of the catch. But as Brooklyn lobsterman David Tarr notes, the big boats might just fish harder on open days and bring in just as much lobster as ever.
The summer day is from, what, 4 in the morning till 8 at night, so I wouldn't be surprised if somebody could haul 800 in a day.
Several fishermen resisted the idea of government intervention, saying the fleet is too diverse for a one-size-fits-all solution, one likened the idea to socialism. And Annie Salikas of the Maine Lobster Dealers Association says lobster wholesalers and processors aren't embracing intervention either. Their markets are so varied, from tourists in coastal Maine to restaurants in Singapore, she says, that any single action is likely to be unsuited for most.
What I'm hearing from my members is that this really needs to be about their individual business decisions to make it through this season as best as possible. And I'm also hearing the same thing from commercial lobster fishermen.
Salika says constant communications up and down the supply chain from water to end buyer will be key in order to align the timing and size of the harvest with actual market demand. Commissioner Kelleher says he's working on a plan to facilitate those communications, and he stresses that he is not pushing for government action. But nonetheless, Kelleher says he has to at least consider options in case prices drop to dire levels. That could include emergency action by the governor.
Do we need something that's in place if we get into a situation where we've got product dying in multiple areas in the state because there's no place for that product to go? All we're doing is undermining the overall value of this brand and this product, and it will likely take multiple years to dig out of.
Some industry observers agree that if a glut develops, it could be years before prices climb back to levels seen in recent years, as happened in 2012. That's because consumers can grow accustomed to lower prices and resist later increase, says consultant John Sacton. He says that today's low prices at the dock and in supermarkets that are running lobster specials are not a good omen.
This is a sign that there aren't enough buyers out there.
Sacton says that through the pandemic, there has been one bright spot, increased demand for fresh seafood among retail consumers, nimble action by individual lobstermen and some dealers to forge new direct-to-consumer markets, he says, has helped to offset the impact of empty restaurants, casinos, and cruise ships.
But the only thing is that applies on the coast and it applies to smaller volumes. You can't scale that up.
Sacton estimates a potential oversupply of lobster in the U.S. and Canada of as much as 100 million pounds this year, roughly the size of Maine's annual harvest. He says it's still an open question whether this summer will devolve into what he calls a chaotic season. Back at the Portland Wharf, lobsterman Willis Spear is a bit worried.
It's so uncertain. I really don't know, but I've got a deep foreboding.
Marine Resources Commissioner Patrick Kelleher will take another sounding of industry sentiment in a final online meeting next week. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Overnight summer camps can open up starting July 1st as part of Stage 3 of Maine's economic reopening plan. Guidance released by the state today suggested campers be kept in consistent groupings, that special precautions be taken in regard to multi-session camps or if new campers arrive during a session. There are also recommendations on incorporating out-of-state campers, limiting contact between groups bunking together, and taking precautions if events must be held indoors. Maine CDC Director Nirav Shah says it's especially important for parents to have a conversation with their kids about staying healthy while at camp.
ask your child to let one of the counselors or the camp nurse know the moment they start becoming ill, or in addition, the moment that anybody who they may be bunking or cabining with starts becoming ill.
Shaw says parents should also have a conversation with camp staff to be sure they're fully prepared and educated. Any camps experiencing outbreaks may be subject to closure. The state is reporting an additional 23 additional cases of COVID-19 today, for a total cumulative case number of 3,017. After multiple days with no COVID-related deaths, the state CDC reports that another death has occurred. That number now stands at 103. 2,490 people have recovered from the disease. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 for Your Vote 2020 primary candidate interviews with Bree Kidman, Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate, and Eric Brakey, Republican candidate for Maine's 2nd Congressional District. I'm Ed Morin.